Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
you're like,
nothing
you're like,
about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay?
And so then I'm doing this, and then he touches me, and I swear to God, this is going to sound, this is probably one of those you want to pull off the audio for your promo. He touches me with his voodoo stick.
Until you fancy to make a decision, Scott's stuck twisting in the wind, a pawn in your sick, cruel game of vacation domination. I don't know the fuck the Department of Health is. I think this whole thing's a load of horseshit, Matt.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and we have a very interesting show lined up for you here tonight. A little mishmash, if you will. And let's get things kicked off by bringing in my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 219 of the Place to Be Podcast on this very comfortable Wednesday night in the Northeast. Unfortunately, no hoops for you, I imagine, on this Wednesday, JR. But you saw some celebrities tonight anyway. Or you were told about some celebrities.
Yes, I did not see the celebrities. Two of my friends had a softball game. After the game, they went to the bar nearby, and Marshawn Brooks and Vincent Council were there.
Here we go.
Did a shot with them, so kind
of Marshawn
cool.
was wishing, of course, that he was in Miami tonight, unfortunately. But
yeah, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? He had a good year, though. Didn't play enough in the play.
He actually got more... He got more playing time in the playoffs than he did towards the end of the regular season. But hopefully with PJ gone, if they get a new coach in, they'll give him a new – they give him a break. Once PJ came in, they kind of buried him.
Yeah. I feel bad because and that's the only knock on PJ, in my opinion. I thought he did a fine job. I mean, 35-19, and we won't get into the whole thing. But maybe a new coach, for Marshawn's sake, will hopefully get better. And Council, we'll see where he's we'll see what people are thinking in the draft in a couple minutes.
I don't think he's going to get drafted. He may. I think he'll probably try and latch on as an undrafted free agent.
Maybe.
And then if he can't, he'll go overseas. But I think he's got a future in a pro somewhere.
Right. I think so, too.
The latest mock draft had Lito going 29 to Oklahoma City, so we'll see.
Thank God you in all honesty, thank God you were spared of that, because that seemed to be becoming a nightmare more and more. I think I think it's good the Friars.
I don't know. I'll take a guy with that talent for a year any day, especially this year with them trying to establish control of the new conference and everything.
I agree on the court, but who knows what was in this kid's head. I don't know if Cooley could have dealt with that kind of thing. But anyway, neither here nor there. I think the Friars will be fine, but we'll talk about that in a few months. Tonight we're going to talk about this is kind of a very unique show for us. We don't usually, we do the pick your poisons, spin the wheel, make the deal.
And again, for the second time in a row, poor Barely Legal 97 loses by a vote. Mm-hmm. Actually, there might have been more than one vote last time, but it was still pretty close.
Yes.
And so here we are at the result here. Saturday's mm-hmm. main event, July 28th, 1990.
Yes.
Won the vote.
Yes. And this show, it was taped on July 16th. It aired on NBC 12 days later.
Mm-hmm.
After this show, after our cast tonight, you can find it on YouTube. The whole show's on YouTube. You might think that this may be the greatest Saturday Night's main event of all time.
It's definitely
for
arguable.
Many, many reasons.
It's definitely arguable, and we'll get to them as we move along here throughout this review. Yep. And then after this review, Scott, we will be revealing the tournament of trivia matchups. Of course, the second annual trivia tournament starting in a couple weeks. And we have the matchups lined up, and we'll reveal them later tonight.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of good. Got some newcomers in here, some return. Of course, can Jay Hinchy go back-to-back? Can Dave Hall be a bride, not a bridesmaid?
Hope not.
We'll let you know. Let you know later on.
Hey, what is going on here?
You're not allowed. Why are you in here? What is it, parent-teacher night? We're not in the, we're in the other, oh, whatever. Have a donut. Okay. Do you want me to do the, usually do the dates and stuff for the off shows. So go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, go ahead. Usually do the open part for the off shows.
The open part? What do you mean the open part?
Like the date and the live from, they usually do that when we do the non-pay-per-view.
I know, it's been so long since we've done it. Before that, though, before we get to that, why don't we enter the Wild Kingdom first?
Okay.
Welcome to a special edition of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom.
No, Marlon. It's the World Wrestling Federation's Wild Kingdom on Saturday night's main event. And the natives are restless tonight. All I see is animals. Welcome to Omaha. And welcome to the wildest kingdom of them all, the World Wrestling Federation. Hello, everyone. I'm Vince McMahon. And joining me for this rumble in the jungle is Jesse DeBuona Ventura. If you're looking for animals, McMahon, you've got them right here on Saturday night's main event.
Of course, this, as you said, was taped July 16th, 1990, aired July 28th, 1990, from, as you heard, Omaha, Nebraska, from the Omaha Civic Auditorium, sponsored by Mutual of Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
As we heard multiple times throughout this show, announces Vince McMahon and Jesse the Body Ventura. And sadly, Scott,
like the no.
This is a Mutual of Omaha. The final appearance of Jesse Ventura, as far as Saturday Night's Main Events go, and it's his final overall TV taping, the August 18th Superstars would be his final TV appearance. And, of course, he had the issues with the contractual, couldn't agree on the money and everything else, and he bolted. And it was sad because, you know, him being part of the build to SummerSlam 90 kind of feels empty when he's not there to call it, because he was there all summer. I mean, you know, you kind of forget he was there as long as he was past WrestleMania 6. And so it's cool hearing him talk about all the angles and storylines and matches, but then, unfortunately, we don't get to have him there for the blow-off.
Yeah, and the way he is on this show is just classic Jesse. It's a heartbreak. It's a heartbreak that he didn't see it to its fruition, because it would have been an unbelievable. I mean, not that SummerSlam was bad anyway, but no knock on Piper, but obviously Piper couldn't.
There's a lot of stuff I always think back and wonder how cool it would have been if Jesse was calling it, like into 91 and 92. I mean, obviously you get all the Bobby stuff with Flair, which is awesome, but just here, imagine if Jesse was around for all that too.
Oh my God, Jesse and Bobby could have been at ringside while Jesse's doing the Rumble in Albany. I mean,
yeah,
that would have been a just as good a second option than what we got. You know?
Definitely.
So,
all right. So as you heard, Lord Alfred Hayes, and what was his name that he went under?
Jim Hayes.
No.
Marlon Hayes.
Marlon. Yeah, I don't think it was Hayes either. It was Marlon something. Anyway, welcomes us to the Wild Kingdom, decked out in safari gear. In Omaha, Nebraska, Vince and Jesse in the booth. Jesse's final appearance. They run the entire card down. And after we get our opening animation, of course, the always wonderful Saturday Night's Main Event opening animation, we get promos from Rick Rude of the Ultimate Warrior, some basic stuff. First thing that kind of caught me off guard, Scott, was the weird warrior face paint during this time where he painted his cheeks instead of his whole face.
Yeah, I thought it was bad suntan when I first saw it today. I watched it a couple times. It looked very weird. His tan skin morphed with his makeup. It was almost like one big makeup. I don't know. I can't explain it. It's just very bizarre.
His attire, and he had the headband. His attire would get even weirder at the towards the end later when he comes back for the interview. We'll get to that. But so our opener in a very curious match is Ultimate Warrior defending his World Wrestling Federation Championship against Ravishing Rick Rude. Of course, this match had already been announced for SummerSlam. And they're having it here, which is very un-WWF-like at this time, to give away pay-per-view matches on TV.
I didn't get that either.
Rude, of course, had his new look, the short hair, more serious. Jesse knows that Rude's the only man to have defeated the Warrior, which I thought was a nice little hook for this.
Yes. It was good that they put those feuds together.
Yes,
because it had been a while. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, it had been a while, but not that long ago. It was only, you know, about 14 months before this, so not a super long time ago.
Not super long time, and plus he'd been off camera for the most part. He beat Jimmy Snuka at WrestleMania 6, mm-hmm. and then he left. Then he was gone for a while, and then they started cutting the vignettes, showed his haircut. He was doing running the beach and all that kind of jazz.
Yep.
To get himself pumped up again. So Jesse, as usual, has his favorites.
Of course, Rude was always one of them. So the crowd is hot for Warrior. Rude attacks off the bell. Jesse thinks Rude's going to outsmart Warrior and win on his brains. Warrior makes a quick comeback, tosses Rude all around the ring. Rude is kind of a mess as Warrior's just dominating him. And again, Scott, it's very weird to have this pay-per-view match on free TV and then have Warrior kind of beat the piss out of him early on. I thought it was even weirder. Mm-hmm. So Warrior crushes Rude with a clothesline, heads up top, which seems a bit nuts and rare, but he actually connects with the chop. I thought that was kind of cool. Mm. Rude dodges a splash to finally stop Warrior. Rude clocks him with the belt on the floor. Some good heel work here with Heenan assisting Rude so he could get the shot in, I thought. Rude goes up top too, but gets caught by a Warrior right hand. Rude starts to work the back, and they go back and forth. Warrior shakes it off and slams Rude. Rude comes back with a sleeper. I thought this was a pretty good pace. And most Saturday Night's Main Events matches did have that kind of pacing because they were trying to burn through them and keep the crowd hot and keep the pace up. And you don't see too many slow or sluggish Saturday Night's Main Event matches, I didn't think.
Well, let me tell you something. And we're coming off a month ago that crazy, weird crowd at IZOD the night after WrestleMania 29. This Omaha crowd is absolutely insane right from the start of the card. And I think they are a huge part of why the show is so great. I mean, a lot of it, I think, has to do with the way the audio was and how Vince wired things. I mean, the crowd was really loud.
Well, don't forget, too, I mean, I'm sure there was some sweetening going on here. So I always have a hard time really trusting the crowd reaction for taped shows like this, especially at this time. But looking at them, they were up on their feet a lot and yelling. So visually, you could see it. You know, sometimes you hear the crowd going crazy, and then you look, and they're all sitting on their hands. But
yeah,
here for sure, they definitely seemed to be fairly legitimate.
Yes, yeah, they did. I mean, they were nuts. They were into this match. Obviously, at the time, at this point in 1990, Warrior red hot, obviously world champion, and the top, well, 1A face. Another face would show up later. And it was just a great match. It was weird. It was very weird, the booking. It was very un WWF like. I mean, you're right. The SummerSlam match had already been announced. Was the stip announced already?
I don't think so. I think that
I don't think it was either. I think that's talked about later. We'll get to that in a little bit. So yeah, so the main event, or one half of the main event of SummerSlam, had already been announced. It was going to be the Ultimate Warrior defending the World Wrestling Federation title against Rick Rude. So why are we having it here? I was perplexed by that.
And I could maybe understand it. And let's finish talking about the match, and then we'll talk about the result. and kind of go where they could have went.
Mm-hmm.
So Rude rides Warrior right to the mat with a hold. Warrior fights out. And the crowd is just hot, like you said. Warrior's comeback's pretty good as he keeps selling and popping back up. Like, it almost reminded me of Rocky when he was getting pounded by Apollo, and he kind of does that, like, he gets hit, or even Clubber Lang, where he gets hit in the face and kind of turns back to one knee and then pops back up, gets hit, pops back. The way he was doing it was very Rocky-like, I thought. I don't know if you caught that as well, but
A little bit.
Rude goes to the Rude Awakening, but Warrior breaks the hold. Rude kicks Warrior, snaps off a Rude Awakening for a near fall. That I didn't care for, Warrior kicking out of his finish before they even get to pay-per-view.
Yeah, that was strange. What was going on here?
Odd. I mean, Rude was hanging with Warrior here and looked strong, but some of the decisions were just weird. Warrior hits a splash, but Heenan comes in and busts up the pin. Warrior falls after and attacks Heenan, drawing Rude out too. They brawl on the floor. Heenan's involved there. Warrior and Heenan get in the ring. Warrior beats the piss out of him. Rude gets countered out. I thought this was really confusing. After all the months of building Rude to be a legit threat and a badass, it seemed like they kind of pissed it away here. Rude, I thought, should have gone over by DQ or cheating in a non-title match. He was booked well to a point in this match. He hung with Warrior and looked strong, but it's clear that Warrior had the match won. Just very un-WWF-like to have the heel challenger just get outworked like this. Mm. And I don't know. if you're going to have this match, Rude should have just beat the crap out of him and gotten DQ'd. To just have him get countered out after Heenan saved him just seemed counterproductive, and to have Warrior kick out of his finish. I mean, I know they were building towards the stip, and that was a piece of it, but it just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth.
I have a theory that we'll get to at the end of the we can talk about it when we get to the end of this match, but I have a theory now that it's...
We're at the end of the match, so go ahead. You can talk
okay.
about it.
Do you think somebody got in somebody's ear about the way this was booked?
No.
Great, the other half of the main event, if you know what I mean.
Well, possible. I don't think... I don't think anyone had to get in anyone's ear. I think maybe they looked at it and thought the other match was more marketable and more of a marquee match. So, yeah, on that hand, you may be okay. right, kind of. But
okay.
on the flip side, I also think that maybe internally they didn't see Rude as a legit contender. So maybe they saw more money. Maybe they assumed the other main event would sell the show, so they could use this to just make Warrior look like a beast and have him just wipe Rude out twice and just really... get big wins. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of.
Then why not? If they're bucking conventional wisdom, like they seem to have been for this match, the way it was booked, then why not have the other match last?
Because this one had a clean finish, and you're still trying to make Warrior your champion. And once you get the pay-per-view sold, it really doesn't matter about match order.
Yeah, that's true too. I guess.
You know, it's like the whole point is just to sell what. When we look at the build for that match as we get there, you can really tell that they were focusing heavily on that. But I thought the match in a vacuum was pretty good. I thought the energy was good. I liked Rude's aggression. I thought they were both aggressive. I liked that a lot. And I just don't like the finish when you factor in where they were headed later that month.
I don't either. But again, not a knock on the on the match or on Rude or on Warrior.
Right.
I think a lot of it was
the booking.
Yeah, and where it came from.
I don't know,
because I don't want to think that it was politicking going on, of course, in this era of wrestling. There was politicking everywhere, along with a lot of cocaine, according to Billy Jack Haynes. But I don't know. I'm perplexed by this. Look, they wanted to make the show huge, and the other two matches, or three matches, but two of the next three matches we'll discuss were big time.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that this could have been handled differently. I would have no problem with Warrior in a non-title match against another good heel.
Yeah, I think that was probably your better bet.
I mean, who could you put? Obviously, your other big heel, your other top-tier heel on the roster, is in a match later on. So we can't use him.
Well, you had Earthquake, but you couldn't.
Haku?
You couldn't job him. Nah, Haku was kind of flattened
Akeem?
Out at this point.
Well,
nah, how about like Warlord or Barbarian? I mean, they were booked pretty strongly coming off of WrestleMania 6.
Yeah.
Could have used one of them here. Had Bobby. I mean, Barbarian was with Heenan.
Yeah, that's true.
Could have done that and then had Rude jump Warrior after the match.
Mm.
Savage?
Yeah. Why not Savage?
DiBiase?
Why not DiBiase? There's a myriad of heels. Hell, you're going to think I'm nuts. I don't know if he was still around. No, he probably wasn't still around. How about Zeus?
No, he
was
long
still
gone.
Around?
No, he was long gone.
Okay, never mind then. I don't know if he was lingering or not. I had a feeling he
was. No,
wasn't.
He was gone.
That's why I didn't want to say it at first. But
he's been gone since November. No, he was gone since...
I wasn't sure if he... I hadn't remembered if he lingered after the new year or not. I don't remember. But anyway, you've got... The whole premise of this is there was a myriad of good, solid TV heels that could have gone in
the problem slot. Was, though, all of them had been killed off by Hogan. So, and this goes back to the whole issue of why Warrior's title reign was a fucking disaster anyway, because he had no legit threat. I mean, God, after SummerSlam, he's feuding with, Demolition with the Road Warriors.
Yeah, he's in tag feuds. Yeah, he's in a tag feud. I don't think he defended the title on TV after SummerSlam.
No. But, not until the Rumble.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, he may have on a Saturday Night's main event, but he definitely not on pay-per-view.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And...
He did not know the next Saturday Night's main event. He was in the sixth man with LOD against Demolition. So
September 18th. Yep. And then the next one.
I mean, I don't know if there was a Superstars.
Wow. The next Saturday Night's main event is not till April 15th of the fall. Wow. Man, what a gap, huh?
Well, that's when they were starting to taper off. 90 is really the last full year of Saturday Night's main events. Yeah, 91.
The next Yeah, the next Saturday's main event after September 18th is April 15th, 91.
And then that's the only one in 91. And then they did the two in 92 with Fox. So you could tell the NBC bloom was off the rose here heading into 91.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although 91, there was a main event as well in there. So.
Right. Well, plus at the time, believe it or not, I think a lot had to do with it. A lot that had to do with it is the fact that the Saturday Night Live roster was actually really good. In the mid-80s, the mid to late 80s, the SNL roster was not that great. So they didn't want to, you know, they gave NBC the week, you know, the week, or NBC gave them once a month. But then when you got to the late 80s with Dennis Miller and Kevin Nealon, Dana Carvey, and the roster was really, and Norm MacDonald, and the roster of guys was really good, and the show was at its zenith again, I think NBC didn't feel like putting wrestling.
Well, in 90, it went quarterly. Through 89, they were still monthly.
Yeah.
For the most part, there's a couple gaps in there, but...
But I think that had a lot to do with it.
And actually, yeah, even 89, they're not monthly. They may be like...
I think that had a lot to do with it, my personal opinion. I might be thinking outside the box here, but I do really think, I mean, the SNL roster from like 87 to
90, they still had to take weeks off. I mean, even now they take weeks off.
Right. But I mean, I don't think they took as many, and there were more repeats in the summer.
Oh, right, here we go. I got the, you know, we can stop guessing. while ratings remained strong throughout 1990, they began to fall shortly after. One factor was NBC affiliate known as KNBC opting out to air news bulletins over the February 1st, 1991 episode of the main event. NBC, who had just acquired the rights to broadcast NBA games, now started to lose interest in wrestling as Saturday's main event was dropped. Fox picked it up in 92, but they only aired two, and then that was it. So, there you go.
Well, I mean, I'm not disputing it. I'm disputing the logic of why. I'm not disputing that that's true.
No, I would think it's maybe.
The NBA doesn't play games at 11:30 on Saturday night. That made no sense.
Maybe that's out of the shit going on.
I know that's true. I know that's a truth.
I think it's ratings based. I think anything else that you just...
I mean, this got a 7.2.
I don't know what ratings were for networks back then.
Yeah, so. I don't know either.
All right, let's move on.
So anyway, so Warrior wins by DQ. Yep. It gets sloppy at the end, and obviously we're far with it. This feud's far from over, and we'll talk more about it later. So.
All right, so we'll go over to Gene Okerlund and Lord Alfred Hayes in the Hunting Lodge, and this is where we start the run of Hayes calling Gene Jim, which I thought was funny.
Yes.
Hayes says they'll be facing imminent danger. Usual camp here from these two, with Hayes playing the straight man and Gene kind of playing the goof, which I liked. And these skits, you know, normally you see some of these skits and you roll your eyes, but I thought these were really good as we go throughout the show.
I am looking up right now because I'm pretty sure that they were calling him Lord Marlon Hayes.
It could have really been. I thought he had a different last name. I know it's definitely calls him Jim.
Yeah. No, I know he's definitely calling him Jim, and then Mean Gene's funny at the end. But I'm pretty sure they like made a gag about, because it was Mutual of Omaha, and they were saying Lord Marlon Hayes. Hmm. I'm pretty sure. But I'm going to have to look it up. That up.
All right. So then we get the Mountain Dew Slam of the Week. Boss Man Slam. I thought it was fun just because we got to hear Big Boss Man's music.
Awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't that 2 minutes just make you smile?
Oh yeah, I used to always love the old.
This whole show made me smile, but just that. First of all, just Mooney, who's awesome, and I just, you know, I get a smile on my face anytime I hear the old Boss Man theme.
I used to always love the Mountain Dew Slam of the Week.
Yes, I do too. But yeah, that was on there as well.
Did you think it was an impressive slam?
it was a very impressive slam. It's Boss Man, of course, it's an impressive slam. Yes, no, I enjoyed that very much. So nice. Then, you know what's coming up now. You gonna be all right?
We get to the music video, Scott.
You gonna be all right?
That broke my heart.
Yep.
I had just started watching wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
The plucky 9-year-old had just started right around a little before WrestleMania 6, but following WrestleMania 6, of course, was my, really where I started to ramp up leading into SummerSlam. So. Of course, right away you latch onto Hulk Hogan. And then within weeks of becoming a wrestling fan, Hulk Hogan, the icon, the legend, is destroyed by the earthquake on the Brother Love Show. And then I tune into Superstars one Saturday and saw this.
Video tribute. Thank you.
the shots alternating between Hulk Hogan dominating and the clips of the old days, and then Earthquake just destroying him. And then they go into this sick, sadistic version of Real American just fucking ripping your heart out. This fucking MIDI version of this fucking song.
Meanwhile, on a calm, very normal, all-American street in West Warwick, Rhode Island, little Italian heart was breaking.
It was awful. And actually, I wasn't even in West Warwick. We were living with my grandmother because they were redoing my
house. That's right. That was right. You mentioned that once before. That's right. The house was being done, right? It was being renovated.
I was in the basement on Cornell Street, funny enough.
You were even on the 196.
Well, it wasn't the 196.
Oh, no, you don't live there anymore. Well, you were on the street of the 196. Yes, what is it, the 185 or something?
The 80.
180.
No, 80.
You're in the basement of the 180.
Oh, my God, the 80. Fuck.
What, 80?
Yes. Jesus Christ.
80 to 190. Wow. It's not many houses between your old house and your grandmother's, and it went up 100 and...
Well, they squeeze a lot in there.
Wow, Jesus. That's a lot of houses. Anyway. In any event, your heart was breaking somewhere in that state.
I was very sad. Very, 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 very sad.
Song sounds like it came off the Attitude game. But let me tell you something. That was the first time. I mean, they had some good shots here and there throughout the 80s, but that was the first that I remember saying, wow, that was really good. That was really well done, that whole piece.
It's like the MIDI sad porn version of his song.
And then, of course, the closing piece with the open locker, the t-shirt, and the cross.
I'll tell you, they made Earthquake look like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
And the pictures, I think this whole feud was really well done. I mean, you know, in reality, of course, Hogan was taking time off to go film Suburban Commando.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he was out. But, yeah, I mean, I thought the feud was well done. I thought they made Earthquake look like a beast. I really do. And, you know, let me ask you this. Because
mm-hmm.
I was talking to Chad about this while I was watching the show. Do you think Earthquake would have been more of a long-term heel or maybe gotten over more if he didn't look so old? Like, I know he wasn't old. He was, like, only in his, like, early 20s or mid-20s during this push. But his hair made him look so old.
Yeah, it did.
Like, he had kind of a goofy, weird, non-heel, legit heel threat look.
Mm-hmm. I thought it would have been better if he was bald.
Yeah, or wore a wig, like Sexy Steve.
with the Portuguese dubbing? Yeah, I think so.
I thought he still did a great job, and he's an awesome... Yeah. He was a great performer, and they booked him really well. It just seems like his run should have been more lengthy as a top heel. Like, I feel like Hogan just vanquishes him and he doesn't do much else. I feel like during this time off, he should have feuded with Warrior. I really think, well, I guess you can't argue with it, but I was going to say maybe they should have built a Warrior Quake at SummerSlam and then you have Hogan, but you can't have Quake lose to Warrior and then Hogan fight him. Doesn't make sense. So I guess he was destined to be fucked.
Unless, well, now you're being really...
You have Quake win the title.
Here's an idea that we could do for a what if or a screwed up booking. Let's say that because we can have a great discussion.
Mm-hmm.
What would have happened if the war in Iraq or the Desert Storm, Desert Shield never happened?
Well, even if it did, though,
discussion.
Even if it did, you can still maybe say they don't have to go with Slaughter. Like, what if they did do the whole thing and had Quake in that spot instead? May have Quake, you know, still get the DQ lost at SummerSlam to Hogan.
Quake beat Warrior for the title at the Rumble?
Yeah, and then Hogan gets his revenge over Quake. No, I have Hogan Quake at WrestleMania.
Hogan Quake, right. But then you've got evil Canadian Quake. I don't know. I don't know if the American... Well, I guess I wouldn't have had to go that far.
No, I'm saying you don't have to go all that. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, maybe. That's a good topic for someone to think about, maybe write up. What would have happened? That's a good what if. What if the Gulf War didn't happen? And they didn't go, and Slaughter didn't get the huge build. And
I don't think you can go that far with what if the war didn't happen. I think you're just going to say what if they didn't take advantage of the war.
If they decided not to go, what they decided to go with Slaughter. Yeah. If they didn't decide to go with Slaughter.
All right.
Because you could have easily had Warrior Quake at SummerSlam. Quake win the title there. Who says a Warrior had to keep it till SummerSlam, for till the Rumble? Jesus, he
Well, you got to give him some time. I mean, geez, he just won it. You can't have him lose it already.
Well, I mean, he wasn't even defending it.
But still, they didn't know it at the time. I mean, if you had him...
The highlight of the week on Superstars is what weird colored leather would be on the belt.
Yeah, but you really just destroy him altogether if you fucking have him lose it at SummerSlam right away.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Kevin Kelly would be ripping his hair out, whatever's left of his hair right now. This fantasy booking. All right. After we pause and wipe the tears, Vince McMahon is in the ring and he brings out the returning Hulk Hogan to an ear-splitting pop. This is Hulk's first appearance since Quake attacked him on the Brother Love show. Jesse doesn't think Hogan's ready. He thinks his ego is going to hurt him at SummerSlam. And it's funny because he says that and then he's obviously not at SummerSlam, but they kind of had Piper pick up that and beat that drum at SummerSlam for him. Because I remember Piper really went on that and saying it was Hogan ready. That was a big storyline of that match. Hogan thanks all the fans for their prayers and cards. He vows to answer each and every letter, or some WWF intern probably will. Hogan is going to show Quake what a big mistake he made. Hulkamania has been sneak attacked before, but not as bad as this planned attack by Jimmy Hart, Earthquake, and Dino Bravo. He saw them all laughing as he was wheeled out on the stretcher. Hogan gives props to his buddy Tugboat for having his back during the downtime. Tugboat, of course, will be in his corner at SummerSlam. Now, Bravo, Quake, and Hart hit the ring, but Tugboat makes a save before anything happens, and we take a break. I really like this promo from Hogan. Thought it was one of his best ones. A lot of fire, really sold the angle beautifully. And again, a big-time storyline heading into SummerSlam.
Absolutely.
I mean, to me, you can see why this was really the focus match, because I thought it was a way better storyline and deserved to be.
Yep, I agree. And the promo was tremendous. Hogan really, I mean, he was legitimately missed. Yeah, it was a big deal. It was definitely a big deal. And I think the match definitely, I think it should have gone last. Here's a question for you then. If this was such a big feud and they thought this match had legs, why didn't it end clean? What was not ending it clean doing for them?
I think they were still going to go around the house circuit, because don't forget, they didn't get a chance to, because Hogan's been gone.
True.
So, I mean, that would have been a real waste of the feud to just have Hogan pin him clean here, and then you waste all of Earthquake's heat on what? You'd even get to go around the circuit with it.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big part of why.
It probably was a big part of it. Yeah.
I think they wanted to make sure they
Maybe that's why they didn't have it last.
Yeah, I think it's why it wasn't last. I think it's why Hogan didn't win it clean. I think they wanted to keep the feud going and you know, and take it around the houses and try and give Quake a little... Because don't forget, Quake is still booked well. I mean, they're on opposite teams of Survivor Series as captains, and then the last two in the Rumble. So, you know, Quake really still does get a good push. So it's not like it just ends here.
Oh, my God. You know what's funny? A minute ago, I said, oh, what about Haku as a viable opponent for Warrior? He had the title shot with Warrior on the last...
I thought so. Yeah, I thought they had a match.
The one in April, on April 28th, he beat Haku for the title. So that's funny that I mentioned that, and there it was. I mean, I think that obviously Hogan is still red hot. He's still, I mean, let's be honest. As much as everybody wants to say what they want about Hogan, about Warrior, Hogan is still the number one guy in the company, regardless whether Warrior's got the belt or not. I think if you ask person for person, who their favorite guy was, there were still more guys that liked Hogan more.
Especially
Mr. Burba. Yeah. Even though we were up to something, you. I think that I don't think Hogan's pops really started to shit the bed until the main event roster right now is still very light, so Hogan was still missed. But by mid to late '91, when we're getting, you know, Savage is elevated a little bit more and he's a babyface, and then you got Flair and then Sid and then Taker, you know, like after a while people like it, are digging these new dudes, and Hogan's like, oh, Hogan's there, don't worry about it. But right now he's definitely still the big man on campus.
Definitely.
Yeah, so great promo, though. Great promo.
All right, so we head back out to the wild where Marlon is leading Jim around. They run into Coco Beware and Frankie. I jumped out of my seat. He calls Gene Jim, too, which cracked me up for some reason. Coco scampers off. We see an orangutan swinging around, and Gene trips and falls and ends up face-to-face with a snake. But before disaster strikes, Jake makes a save and takes a little shot at and dig at Bad News Brown as well. We cut over to Alfred and Gene crossing railroad tracks, but instead of a train, the Bushwhackers march down the tracks, and then we head down to the arena. I liked how I thought Alfred was just funny along how his narration completely went against what we were seeing. So like Gene, he like pushes Gene into the snake, and then he's like, "As I was about to save Jim from the snake at the last minute, Jake," you know, it's like, but in reality, Alfred's like running away from the fucking snake. So
I like the one where he gets bit by the bug or the mosquito and starts acting all weird. He shoves the leaf up his nose. I think he does that in a little bit.
Yeah,
that's
coming up.
Yeah, that's pretty funny too.
All right, so next match, the tag titles are on the line. Our second title match of the night is Demolition defends against the Rockers. And, of course, this was during the three-man stuff with Demolition, so Crush is in the mix. Mm-hmm. And Vince is already bitching about the unfair advantage Demolition before the match even starts. Axe on the outside. Smash and Crush, we're going to work things here. Rockers make their way out. Smash and Jannetty start off with Smash hammering away off the bell. Marty comes firing back, busting Smash down before drop-kicking him to the floor. Smash regroups, heads back in, and regains control, but Marty makes a blind tag, which allows Sean to come in with a head-scissors takedown. Momentum ends quickly with a thud because Crush comes in with a big clothesline. Works over Sean. Marty slips in. They double-team Crush a bit just to turn the tide. Jesse doesn't handle that well, as you always expect with the Rockers and double-teaming. He always flips his lid. Mm-hmm. Marty's in, but Crush overpowers him. Marty gets a sunset flip off the top rope, but only gets two. Marty gets dumped to the floor, and Axe nails him after a break. We come back to Smash working over Marty. Crush tags in, comes off the top with a big clubbing blow, followed by a backbreaker. Jannetty hits the ropes, but runs right into a one-handed choke slam, which I thought was pretty neat, too. It wasn't like an elevated one. He was like one there. He just kind of ran. He grabbed him by the throat and just spiked him down.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, it was a good move. It was a good move.
Marty peppers his way back in, but tags a tag to Smash by Crush stops that. Smash goes to a bear hug, and Crush tags back in. Crush is in control, so he drops his head, allowing Jannetty to smack him off a whip to the back of his head onto the mat. He makes a hot tag. Michaels meets Smash with a flurry, drop kicks Crush to the floor. Jesse's in shock as the champs seem to be in trouble. The crowds go bananas here as the Rockers look to be on the verge of winning the titles. Jannetty gets back in, the double drop kicking, super kicking everything in sight. They head up top, hit the double fist drop, but Crush makes a save at the very last second. Sean rolls up Smash, but Axe comes in and takes off Sean's head with a clothesline. Axe covers and Joey Morella counts three. That idiot Morella gives the champs to win. I thought it was a very good match, red hot, fast-paced. Rockers look good in there. The Hearts come out. They're yelling at Morella. LOD comes out. They're screaming at Morella as well. And I love here how Jesse just shit talks to Hart, saying they want to avoid Demolition at SummerSlam. And he basically tells them to all piss off and get the fuck out of the ring, because he said the Hearts would rather face the Rockers. That's why they were in there lobbying
for
the Rockers.
I know why they're out there.
What'd you think of this match, though? I really liked it.
I loved it. I thought it was awesome. Yeah. I actually enjoyed Crush the first time I saw him. I thought it was a definite improvement, obviously, in work rate. You know, Axe was an older guy. He was breaking down. I thought it was smart to turn them heel. Did you think it was smart to turn them heel?
To do the three-man, yes. If it was still Axe and Smash, no.
Okay.
If they had to go to the three-man thing with Crush, they had to be heels. It wouldn't have made sense to do it as faces.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. If there was no Crush and it was still just Axe and Smash, Road Warriors still show up, what do you do with them?
Yeah, you got to turn them. No, you got to turn Demolition heel at some point, I guess, between the Hearts. You can't have them, the Hearts, and the Road Warriors all on the face side.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I guess they were destined for it. It just seemed like after that huge pop at WrestleMania, it just seemed like they turned a heel so quickly. I think if LOD came in like in July like they did, I think you could have maybe stretched out the Demolition face turn or face run a little bit longer. So maybe instead of having them turn heel almost immediately after Mania, you kind of do it like in September instead, and maybe you have them face someone else at SummerSlam and do something. Because LOD doesn't wrestle at SummerSlam anyway, so.
Right, exactly. So, but the match was great. I enjoyed it. Fast-paced. Rockers were still, the Rockers were always a good TV team at the time still. And, Demolition cementing their heel run. So I enjoyed it very much. Very good. I liked it a lot.
All right, so we head back to the jungle where, to my enjoyment, Hayes keeps trolling Jim Oakland here. He's getting ripped apart by mosquitoes before suffering from ant fever, which leads to hallucinations, and he starts acting like all kinds of various wild animals. Hayes makes a save with the nasal application of a special kind of leaf.
In other words, he sticks a leaf up his nose.
Yeah, this is awesome. Fucking Oakland acting like all kinds of animals.
All right,
now we hit the match of the night, our third title match of the night, Scott. Mm-hmm. Tito Santana challenging Mr. Perfect. This is the rematch from the IC tournament finals from Superstars back in April. Mm-hmm. Mooney chats with Perfect and Heenan before the match. Of course, this is the midst of Perfect's first title run. Mm-hmm. Bobby Heenan leads Perfect out as Jesse and Vince debate whether someone can truly be perfect. Jesse also reminds us that anyone can win on any given night. Perfect starts with some strikes, but Tito quickly reverses the momentum with a series of arm drags that eventually send Perfect to the floor. Tito follows out and chases him around the ring. He unleashes some chops and punches on the floor as Jesse chastises him for cheating as needed. Perfect slows him up with some chops back inside. Tito drops his head and catches a boot to the grill. Perfect plants him with a clothesline and Bobby shouts instructions. Perfect starts laying in some right hands and then follows with a nice standing dropkick. Jesse starts with the racist jokes as usual as Tito starts to kick his way back into the match. Perfect slams Tito down as Jesse questions Tito's conditioning, saying if he's already out of gas, he's not as well conditioned as he thought.
Yes, I remember that. That was actually a good line. I remember that line. Yeah, yeah. Jesse's just so damn good.
Yeah, he picked up on so many little things. And I know. He was really just peaking. As good as he always was, it just didn't really seem to be peaking in 1990 with the Rumble and WrestleMania. He was great. And then all through the summer, just really on point. And yeah, this sucks. Perfect grabs a neck vise and he turns it into a choke, and Bobby distracts Dave Hepner. Crowd is trying to rally Tito, who breaks a hole by yanking Perfect's hair and landing a big uppercut. Perfect tries to keep Tito reeling, but eats a big boot on the charge. Tito sends Perfect flying it with a big clothesline, followed by a huge right hand that sends Perfect careening into Hepner. So this is where the match really turned. Tito quickly works a leg and hooks the figure four, but Hepner's down writhing on the mat, holding his ankle. Perfect is giving up, but the referee's not there to make the call. Heenan gets on the apron, so Tito breaks the hold and goes and checks on Hepner. Jesse thinks Tito may try and put the figure four on Hepner because he's pissed. Tito nails a beautiful flying forearm. That's one of the best ones I've ever seen, actually. By the time Hepner can hobble over, though, Perfect kicks out of the pin. Tito's pissed and is yelling at Hepner. He goes to the middle rope and nails Perfect with a big flying clothesline. But again, Hepner's slow and Perfect stays alive. I thought this is great here by this point. The false finishes were really well done. Tito calls for a second referee and one finally arrives, but we take a break. When we return, the new ref is checking on Hepner and Tito's stalking over to Perfect. Tito's whipped in but flies onto Perfect with a crossbody for two. Perfect slugs Tito down as Heenan yells at the cameraman, "Get away from me." I love that too.
Yes.
Perfect is hammering on Tito. He snapmares Tito over and cranks his neck with another neck snap. Perfect stomps away, but Tito gets up to his feet. They trade blows until Perfect hits a nice thrust kick. I thought that was cool too. You never see
yes,
like that.
Yes, I see. Yeah, and I think Vince makes a point of that too. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was like out of Haku's playbook or something.
Yes.
Perfect stays on the neck. He's wearing Tito down. Tito again summons the strength to reverse Perfect into the corner. He slugs him up over the top to the floor. Tito goes out and fetches him. And then when he get back in the ring, he just chucks him around the ring by his hair. Perfect tries to slide out, but he ends up backing himself into the ring post and crotching himself. Tito crunches Perfect with both an inverted and a regular atomic drop, and the latter sends Perfect whipping into the buckle. Perfect bounces out. Tito cracks him with a big clothesline. He covers, but Perfect again barely kicks out. Heenan and Jesse and the fans are just all going crazy at this point. Tito blocks a Perfect plex with an inside cradle, and then Perfect reverses the inside cradle to one of his own and steals the win. I thought this was an awesome match. It may be the best match in Saturday Night's Main Event history. They went all out, had great heat, great fire. The near falls, I thought, were damn near perfect. And no pun intended. Perfect, still the IC champ. Tito, still the hard luck loser.
And Jesse's a fucking monster. He's a beast. Yes. As the announcer here.
Yeah, that match was incredible. I mean, really, it could honestly be the best big match of outside Hogan Warrior of 1990 for the WWF. I mean, it was just really, really well done, really well worked. These guys had good chemistry. Tito's always had that good fire in his comebacks, and I love how Perfect just steals the win using his craftiness at the end.
Yeah, and again, I think the biggest point of this is the commentary. Jesse is just a freaking monster right now. It sucks. This is making me mad, actually, because you're right. He was as great as he was through all the years, 86, 87, 88. It felt like late 89 to now, he was just on fire.
Yep.
I mean, of all time, on absolute fire. Anytime he was on the air. It sucks. Why didn't Vince just pay him, for God's sakes? It's so stupid. Just pay him, you know?
Well, I think it, too. Is this around the problem with the royalties the around this time?
Pay that, too. It's freaking Jesse, for God's sakes.
Oh, I know.
You know? So stupid. It's not like they were broke, God's sakes.
So what did you think of this match for Perfect's legacy in this first title reign?
Absolutely. I think this match set the tone for the 3 years that he was here, for that he was in the company, or you know, as a superstar and as an active wrestler, you know, fans, Federation era fans, as much as they were so pro babyface, you had your occasion, you know, like guys like my brother and you know, guys who always loved heels even back then. I think that they at least will accept the respect of a good heel And I think that's what makes heels great in the Federation era. And this was the match that, you know, because a lot of WWF fans may not have watched AWA on ESPN. So nobody knew, you know, Kurt Hennig from Adam. And so this was the match that solidified to the fans that Perfect is a legit heel and a guy that needs to be reckoned with. So it made, and it gave Tito, you know, the, hey, you know, he may not be on the regular, you know, top of the card anymore, but the guy will still deliver and entertain for you when you need him. That's why he is what we've always called Ethan's loyal.
TB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
Vincent Kennedy McMahon Jr. here with your WWF Hacksaw Jim Duggan Rob Houston Memorial Fuckface update. In July 1990, Jim Duggan was working for me, snorting coke off Rocket Robbins' fucking rotted vagina with all the rest of the crew. He was working the circuit against Earthquake. And listen to these cities, Criscolo. These are man cities. San Jose, Amarillo, Texas, South Bend, Indiana, Kingston, Ontario, Youngstown, Ohio. Those are real. This is Sioux City, Iowa. That's where a real company runs, Criscolo. Not these fucking podunk bullshit, Montana and fucking Ohio and Youngstown and all these other shit cities that WCW is running.
You know, I'm glad you're here.
You are?
First of all, I'm always glad you're here. Hey, Claire, how are you? It's good to see you.
Shut up. Don't talk to my bitch, Claire.
Why didn't you pay Jesse in 1990?
Who?
Jesse Ventura, the color commentator, the greatest guy in the business at that point.
Whoa.
You were broke. What are you doing? Paying the royalties for the tapes. What's the matter with you?
At the time, Scott, I was really hitting a hard spot financially, and Jesse came to me and said, you know, Vince, I got this offer from WCW for 3 years, and I said, Jesse, I can't match that. I said, I'm going to have to break our 10-year deal. I think it's best if you go off to WCW. I helped Jesse screw me. I mean, but when it came down to it, Jesse didn't want to do what was right for the WWF and take the pay cut and stay in the booth for Roddy. He didn't want to pass a torch to Piper, and Jesse screwed Jesse. Is that all right?
Uh-huh. Okay.
Anyway, Jim Duggan, Storm Coke, Rockin' Robin, a lot of fun times. Matt Rotel is here, the pimp hoopty. I got Anthony Armento booking the next funeral for, never mind, I can't get into that just yet. Criscolo, I hear you have a birthday coming up.
I do, in less than a month.
I will buy you anything in this world because of the kind of friend you are to me. What would you like? I will pick out the finest titles from Michael Vince's porn collection just for you if you want.
One Night with Linda?
Wounds Over Miami.
What happened to that One Night with Linda? It was you, Savage, and Billy Jack Haynes. What was up with that?
Billy Jack Haynes. Talk about coke off fucking Robin's fucking cooch. That guy was fucking crazy, man.
Whoa, Vince.
He put that Argonne hat on her.
Claire's talking to Donna Christianella. You better be careful. Put all that booze away.
All right, I'm out of here, bitch. Suck it. We'll see you next week. Eat my pussy right. Fucking Armento. Talk about biggest pussy. What's that, Rotella? I don't know where the fuck he went. Go find him. These fucking assholes. They think I give a shit about this fucking crap. Wait a minute. Is this... Armento! Get over here!
Vince, the mic is still on.
Go buy me my rubbers! That of Walgreens. Magnums. Alright. What? I don't know. Criscolo something? I don't know what these fucking guys are. They pay me enough and I show up. Whatever. I'm out.
Turn the mic off.
Huh? Rotella, I'm hearing voices again. Would you mix my pills up?
Vince, turn the mic off.
Who's this? Jesse Ventura? I told you I'm not paying you.
Player, turn the mic off. Thank God.
That was nuts.
Wow. Have to entrust X, send people to do everything, huh?
Well, I think you take him back to 90, it just goes fucking loopy.
Jesus. Maybe there was a lot of coke going on. Maybe Philly Jack Haynes was right. Jesus, God. Oof. Okay.
All right. So we go back to the Serengeti. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We're backstage. Jesse's with the Earthquake.
Backstage in the Serengeti. I think Vince is living in the Serengeti right now.
We're backstage. Jesse's with Earthquake, Bravo, and Jimmy Hart. Jesse thinks the fan roar for Hogan will end at SummerSlam. Hart promises Hogan will be stretchered out once again. Quake agrees that Hogan will end up back in the hospital. Bravo vows that there'll be no interference from Tugboat on his watch, and Jesse gives a great ominous warning. No animal can survive an earthquake. And then he gives this little chuckle and this grin. This is awesome. It's like one last great Jesse devious snark.
Yep. This is sadder than the... Seeing him is sadder than the, than the Hogan piece.
I know.
Ugh. Terrible.
It was good stuff.
It was great stuff. And then we had one last match to...
Well, before that, now we go back to the Serengeti.
Now we go back to the Serengeti.
Alfred spots Jimmy Snuka. He's just like galloping through the jungle. I thought that was good, too. I'll tell you, all these wrestlers involved in this really, really delivered. I thought they were all very entertaining in these roles. We get a graphic following the trek through the coastline of Africa. I like how they somehow navigated the entire coast on this trip. Their instincts led them to food, which is actually just a big pot of boiling human bean soup.
Yeah, it's like that. It's soup. Human being soup.
And, human being soup. So then they sneak off. They quickly pass, and they run into some familiar but unfriendly native, Scott. This is the highlight of the night for me. Slick and Akeem. Akeem's just fucking dancing as Slick starts yelling at Alfred about going hunting on their sacred burial ground. Alfred asks where the mouth of the Yangtze River is. But Slick and Akeem both point in different directions and then strut off. I just love Akeem fucking like dancing the whole time. I liked how they used them because they're supposed to be in Africa. That is a really nice touch, all the guys they used here.
Mm-hmm.
Akeem's mullet was also glorious at this point. It was really fucking long.
Of course it was.
Alfred thinks they should just go straight ahead. They ignore both directions from Slick and Akeem. We see the graphic again, and this time they go all throughout the rest of the continent. Finally, they reach a body of water, and Gene ends up taking a dunk in the river after Alfred pushes him in. And Alfred's narration here is awesome again. He says he tried to save Jim, but even though he was the one that pushed him in.
He's throwing pieces of wood at him.
He's like,
or tree bark or something.
Into the piranha-infested river after he fucking chucks him in there. Alfred's pissed that Jim has embarrassed him once again, and then Jim snaps and says, "It's Gene!" And then they walk off. And I like how Alfred's all magazine You've embarrassed me again.
Yeah.
It's really well. This is like some of Alfred's best work, I thought.
Yes, I think so too. Yes, no, it's very well done. This is one of the first. I'm trying to remember when the Saturday Night's Main Events became themed.
Well, these last two definitely are. I think this is
October Fest after that one.
I think these are the only two that really were full on theme. And there's been little themes. They have the This is Wild Kingdom, but wasn't there another one where Jesse was like on a fucking elephant or something weird? Or oh, they were on the horses, right? That was one.
Yeah.
When they were like on the rodeo or something.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think that was the last. Yeah, I know the one in October was an Oktoberfest.
Yeah, so that's definitely the last theme one. Because he even says it at the end of the show. He says, "We'll see you for our fall season." And that was the Oktoberfest theme.
Yeah.
So. And there was definitely another one. You know what? It was the April one. They were in Austin, Texas, and I think they're on the horses.
Yeah, that's right. Were they in horses, like, in the middle of the aisle or something?
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if January had one or not, but so these three definitely had had a hook.
The one in January was in Chattanooga.
They had a big hooking point.
Yeah. The one in January was in Chattanooga, so maybe they had a
Chattanooga choo-choo.
Chattanooga. So, yeah, those clips were funny. I'm pretty sure it was Lord Marlon Hayes and Jim was his toady. But
you've embarrassed me for the last time.
You've embarrassed me for the last time, Jim. I said it's Gene.
All right, then we head to the main event, the debut of the Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich, straight out of World Class and a little bit of dabbling in AWA.
Just a side note, JR, the one before in April was called The Tussle in Texas.
Okay.
This one was called Wild Kingdom. The next one in October, in September, it was taped in September, aired in October, was in Toledo. It was called Oktoberfest.
Yes.
And that was it. It was just those three.
Okay. So January didn't have any.
No. No. Okay. No, it didn't.
All right.
So, and then we get, what is it, the last match?
Yep. Texas Tornado, as we said, making his debut against Buddy Rose, the legend from the AWA.
He's not 215 pounds.
Of course, by this point, he'd been doing the blow-away diet and all that stuff. And yeah. Vince calls Rose hippo-like, which I thought was funny. And Jesse makes some Roseanne Barr jokes. this is Tornado's debut match. Vince really put over the Von Erich family early here. I thought it was kind of neat, too. Tornado had his, like, world-class AWA tights and boots on still. He didn't really have, like, the tassels or any of that. He still had the white with the red stripes down the side.
Yep.
I think those are the ones he wore when he fought Lawler for the when they did the blood finish and everything.
Yeah, he did. He did wear white. Yeah.
It was white with the red.
Yeah.
Rose smacks Tornado in the face, quickly bails to the floor, and Jesse puts over his agility. Tornado blocks a hip toss and takes Rose over with one of his own. Jesse's pretty impressed. Tornado blocks a body slam, then hits one of his own. I kind of like the showcase of Tornado's power here. Anytime Rose tried to move, Tornado blocked it and did one of his own. Rose was a good choice to help put him over. I thought he was a good worker. Tornado shoots Rose into the corner. He flips upside down, flare style to the mat. Tornado hits a drop kick for an air fall. He slugs Rose back to the ropes, and the big man gets tied up. Tornado hammers away, which doesn't impress Jesse because he's cheating instead of letting him break clean. Mm-hmm. Rose wriggles free and tumbles back to the floor on his back. Rose comes back in and goes right to the eyes. He snapmares Tornado down and drops a knee. Rose goes up top, but Tornado meets him, slams him off, follows with the discus punch, and picks up the win. Jesse bitches about the closed fist, but Vince defends it. Mm-hmm. Solid debut for Tornado. I thought he actually felt like a pretty big star coming in here.
Yes. Yeah, he did. They did a good job.
Did you feel like he felt like a main event guy or the mid-level guy he'd become with this match?
I think he was a mid-level guy. I don't think he had that. I don't think the fans were
ready. Coming in in this match, the way they booked him and he pretty much dominated Rose and they put over his family and he was a major... You don't think he... Coming off of this match, he could have been a star?
He might have. It's possible. And then, obviously, what would happen late August in Philly would I think... elevate him even more, but it wouldn't be long before you could tell his matches were starting to get a little erratic and strange, and he's fumbling all over himself. And but maybe because I already had seen like the AWA and I knew the Kerry Von Erich from World Class and stuff, and it's a possibility. I mean, if you think about the roster at that time, probably could have used another face main eventer, but of course, again, by the late fall, early winter, he's already a star.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't their fault. I think they knew maybe they couldn't trust him anyway with that kind of...
Yeah, no, I don't. I think they... I think Fritz probably told him at the time.
I don't think anyone ever told him. I think they knew.
Well, they already had three deaths by that point, so the family was a fucking mess.
I'm surprised they even kind of rolled the dice and brought him in, to be honest.
And then did what they did.
Yeah.
3 weeks later. Why pick him?
Why?
There's an interesting question. I got an interesting secondary theory here. Let's say, coming off this match that we saw earlier, let's say that Kerry Von Erich never shows up.
Mm-hmm.
I would have given Tito the belt back.
Well, if he doesn't show up...
Do you think the only reason they had Perfect lose at SummerSlam
I think it was just
the title for a cheap pop?
I think so, and I think it was to make up for Beefcake not being... Oh, I think Beefcake was going to win, but...
Okay.
I don't know if anyone else in that spot gets the title. I think maybe they just want to put over Tornado and make up for it. But, I mean, who else could they have put in that spot other than Tito? I mean, Tito's an option. Boss Man?
You could have had any face. Boss Man.
Jake.
Jake would have been pretty cool. Jake, you don't see Jake get many titles. He didn't get many title matches as a baby face. That might have been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he had the Bad News Brown thing going on. But
I
think Boss Man was pretty much the only other face besides Tito that didn't really have a feud going.
Right
at this point,
yeah, because he'd only been a face for a few months, so he was kind of pseudo feuding with DiBiase and like the Heenans.
Yeah, no, the Heenan stuff hadn't started yet. He was, really, I mean, he had the DiBiase thing going into the summer, but that would end before SummerSlam because DiBiase moves on.
Yeah, so
Dusty was feuding with Savage still, so
yeah. So I guess he didn't have anything going on.
I think it really would have been Boss Man's the only other option besides Tito.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, if they put this match at SummerSlam, it would have been awesome. The Tito Perfect from here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Might have stolen the show. Absolutely. And then we end the show with a promo from our title match participants.
Jesse catches up with Rude and Heenan. Rude has a good line. He says a caged animal is like a scared animal. And at SummerSlam, they'll be inside a steel cage. So they pretty much... announced that they're kind of haphazardly, actually, kind of slip it in that they'll be in a cage. I thought Rude was funny too. He kind of got a plug for Mutual of Omaha, which made me laugh. this won't be Mutual of Omaha's Saturday Night's main event. The fuck he said. I was like, okay. Rude vows to climb to the top of the cage and come crashing into Warrior's head and become the new world champion. I thought that was a pretty good promo from Rude.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Rude's one of the greatest ever. And it was a good way for them to kind of recover from kind of the match and the way it went. I think Rude did a nice recovery to kind of repump up the title. I was excited for the title match. I definitely remember being excited for the title match.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone really believed Rude could win.
No, probably not. If he didn't win here in any capacity, how was he going to win at SummerSlam?
Right, exactly.
But trying to do that believability thing? Nah, that didn't work. That didn't work back then.
All right, Sean Mooney's with the Warrior, who's looking very 1990-ish, and this is what I was talking about earlier, the leopard headband, earrings, and painted cheeks.
Yes.
Looks like he was like straight out of fucking Van Halen or something.
Exactly, American Anthem or whatever.
It's crazy. So Warrior does his usual Warrior things, puts over the cage match.
Yep.
After that, Vince and Jesse wrap things up. Jesse thinks Hogan and Warrior could be extinct after SummerSlam. We go over to the Hunting Lodge one last time, where Alfred wraps things up. Jim has befriended a monkey, who Alfred says may be a relative of Jim's.
Which Jim?
the monkey does tricks as Alfred wraps things up. Jesse and Vince come back quickly, and Vince says they'll be back in the fall for their next Saturday Night's Main Event, and we get one last shot of Gene playing with the monkey as we wrap up. I thought this was a great Saturday Night's Main Event. I thought it was arguably it could be the best big show of the year based on match quality. I mean, WrestleMania was clearly the best show, but match-wise, this may rival, honestly. They were, you know, three out of the four really good, and even Tornado Rose is quick and painless. Yeah. Tito Perfect, I thought, was awesome. The rest of the card was good, and the Safari skits were a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, no, it's a great show. Now, you and I discussed during pre-production today, I said to you, is this the only time in Saturday Night's Main Event history that all three titles were on the line at the same time? I'm sorry, the first time. We did say that it did happen again later on.
Right, definitely. The last Saturday Night's Main Event in November 92 saw all three titles on the line as well.
Yes, Bret Hart as the champ took on Papa Shango. Money Inc. were the tag champs. They took on Savage and
Warrior.
And, of course, that was the night that Shawn Michaels defeated British Bulldog. But this night was not even the first. The first one, JR, we may have to do this one down the line.
Mm.
The October 3rd, 87, Saturday's main event from Hershey, Pennsylvania. Savage and Honky for the IC title. And that's, of course, the infamous smack when Honky throws Elizabeth down and crushes Savage with the guitar, and of course out comes Hogan and the first handshake into the birth of Mega Powers. Hogan took on Sika for the world title. Sika was supposed to be Kamala, but he was replaced. Bundy fought Orndorff in a regular match, and then the Hart Foundation took on the Young Stallions for the tag straps. So all three titles were on the line at that show.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a good one, but I don't know if it rivals this.
I think this one is more storyline fun.
Yeah.
Skit, you know, with the
it's and match more quality. I mean, it's going to take a lot for a WWF show of the late 80s, early 90s to match quality wise,
right.
Compete with this show. I mean, this was, you're talking about a great match, a 4.5-star, possible match. You have another, I'd say Demolition Rockers was in the 3 to 3.5 range. And I thought the opener was a good 3 as well. I mean, those are high ratings for this time period in the WWF.
Yes, I agree. Incidentally, you know what else happened that night in October of 87? The world premiere of Coco's Pile Driver video. As I perused through the other cards, trying to see if there was any other instances, there were a lot of times where two of them would be on the line. Oh, here we go. On the May 27th, 1989 Saturday's main event, you had Duggan against Rude for the IC title. Hogan, boss man in the cage. Remember what happened that night?
Mm-hmm.
It was the birth of Zeus. And that match is, I don't know, JR, that match might rival Tito Perfect as the greatest.
Very good. Time. Yeah. Yep.
And then, of course, that was the night that the Brainbusters won the titles.
Mm-hmm.
So that Saturday's main event also fairly close.
Well,
maybe
we'll
not
see.
Match quality, but.
Well, these are ones we could definitely throw on the list in future votes. And
let's see.
I think in the next pick your Vince Travolta we'll do in a couple of months, I think, you know, this is another thing Chad was getting on me for, all these fanboy WWF fans. Maybe we won't put a WWF show on there. Maybe we'll mix it up and just do all non-WWF possibilities.
Okay. Yeah, of course. I agree. That was it. So those are the only three instances. And all three of them, those might be the three best WWF Saturday's main events of all time in many different ways. So there you go. July 16th, 1990, Saturday's main event.
July 28th, actually.
I mean, 28th. Well, aired on the 28th, taped on the 16th. I wonder, I'm not going to go get it. I'm not going to do the whole, oh, let's look for it. I wonder if any of those matches are on the three-disc set.
Yes, Tito Perfect definitely is.
Yeah, Tito Perfect definitely is. I don't think the other ones are.
I doubt Rude Warrior is. Demolition Rockers is maybe somewhere, because I mean, I watched that match. I watched this show a ton as a kid. My cousin Matt taped it.
Right.
And I used to just rewatch it constantly. Exactly. Yeah, I have very little on tape at this point.
Yeah, definitely the honky savage stuff. That's on there. And I'm pretty sure
Warrior Rude was not. That aired on primetime though, August 13th. The Demolition match aired on primetime August 6th. Perfect Tito was actually on Best of WWF Saturday Night's Main Event, which I think is the old tape, and then the Saturday Night's Main Event DVD, and then Rose Von Erich aired on August 6th as well. So three of these matches aired August 6th on primetime, and one aired August 13th.
Oh, so if you didn't catch Saturday Night's Main Event, you got it again.
I think they used to do that a lot.
Yeah, they did that a lot.
So, yeah, okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Why don't we go ahead and take a break, and then we'll get down to business, Scott. We got some trivia matchups to reveal.
Yes. However, we first must hear from our sponsors. Because Vince said so. As they grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right. Sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it! Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones.
Ooh. The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Harvard Chat are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, Bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them in PTB Nation. We have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, and more details on that. Also our good friend Graham Cawthon. The History of WWE.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum, TWFnews.com, their wrestling forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation, many blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts. Yours can be included in the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out, find out what they're about at TWFnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com, my good friend Mike. It's a great online radio station. If you're not in the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
Hello, everybody. This is Bruno Lauer. I'm on The Place to Be. You're listening to The Place to Be podcast. And I'm going to tell you something right now. If you didn't know about our business, This is the place to be. The place to be podcast. You know why? Because it's like Mama said, it be that way sometimes.
Alright, Nation, we are back. Saturday Night's Main Event, July 20th, 90s in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's finally time. It's finally here
mm-hmm.
to unveil. 32 men enter. One will stand supreme as the winner of the second annual PTB Trivia Tournament.
Yes.
Got some cool prizes on the line, along with pride.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be recording across two nights. And then they'll be airing as the weeks go on. So yes. It'll be a little bit of time between guys competing. Like, they may compete, you know, when we first record, then it may be a while before they compete again. And we'll have to decide, Scott, if we want to air one a show, two a show, how we want to do it.
Yeah, we
If we do one a show, that's going to take 2 months. So maybe we'll do two per episode.
Two per episode. Okay.
So tonight we're going to reveal the matchups. Nobody is aware of who they're facing at this point. No one in the tournament has been told. These were all done randomly by day. So basically each of these competitors got to choose the day they would prefer. And some said both, so whoever was both, we just plugged them into where they were needed. And from there, we did random draw matchups. So everything is randomized. At the end of this round, Scott, we're going to split up by day again and randomize again. So at this point, there are no brackets.
No, these are just straight-up matchups. Qualifying rounds.
Yep, and after the Sweet 16, we're going to shake things up again. Everyone's going into a randomizer. And then the Elite Eight. We'll go into a bracket that will stay.
And then there'll be brackets. So then you'll know who you would face next.
Yep.
And after the first matchup.
We were just discussing it, but the Boston Bruins have just defeated the Toronto Maple Leafs to take a commanding 3-1 lead.
Woohoo!
Toronto not stronger, as they may
Hub of hockey, baby.
So there you go.
And my brother just texted me the Rangers won as well. So that series is 2-2.
When are the Islanders? Is that tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, game 5. They're 2-2. That series is tomorrow night in Pittsburgh.
I believe it was Krejci that scored the goal, if I'm reading this correctly.
Oh, guy's a beast. He's having some points. I think that's 9 points for him this postseason so far in this series. He's a beast. Good. Waiting for him to shine. And without Marchand, it's going to be tough to score goals. But scoring goals hasn't been the problem in this series. But, they'll go to the Hub Friday night, seal the deal.
Well, maybe we'll be able to watch them if you get here in time.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
All right. Let's reveal some matchups. So we're going to kick things off with Sunday nights.
Yes, these are the Sunday matchups.
We have we have 7 on Sunday night, 8 on Wednesday night, and then 1 on Friday because of time constraints and overseas participants.
Yes.
So, Scott, why don't you... Hang on, let me get some music fired up here. Let me settle in.
There we go.
All right, Scott, kick us off. Who's the first matchup?
Our first matchup is a battle of newcomers, as we will have Jesse Bai taking on Steve Willie.
Willie, checking in early. Now, unfortunately, contrary to his name, Jesse Bai does not receive a bye.
No.
He will have to compete against the Willie man.
Come on, Jesse.
Not from my vantage point, Jess. All right, there's your first matchup. Matchup number 2, we'll see Matt Farrell, one of our longest-time listeners here, take on another long-time listener, Todd Weber.
Oh, and no, Todd, you will not be getting the question, what guy do I call Steve?
Yes.
Not happening. All right. Next up, one of yours and my favorite people on the planet, the misfit himself, James Grunberg.
My illegitimate nephew.
Yes. He'll be taking on a newcomer, Jim Hogan.
What you gonna do, brother?
That's right. So, good matchup there.
All right. Matchup number 4, two stalwarts from last year's tournament. Mm-hmm. Dennis Nunez takes on Michael McDonald from Australia.
No. That's a switch, remember?
Dennis Nunez.
I knew I was going to fuck it up.
Michael McDonald could not do Sunday. He had a swap out with a random draw. Dennis Nunez takes on Jordan Duncan from Michigan. I pulled a Scott.
Brett the Hitman Clark.
Yeah, I definitely pulled a Scott buffer.
Okay, our next matchup. I like this one. This is going to be intriguing. Our man, one of our most valued
Jordan Duncan.
No. One of our most valued members of PTB Nation, Soup himself, Chad Campbell, taking on Definitely, JR, one of yours, my favorite people on the planet, the great Jay Womet.
Yeah, so that's going to be quite the battle.
Yeah.
Two knowledgeable old school guys. And hopefully, take a minute here just to send some shout outs and prayers Jay's way. I don't know if anyone has been following along in the live chats. Jay's not doing too well right now. He had to go to the hospital overnight. Infections rattling his body. So they're hoping tomorrow they can. Well, I guess they're working on getting some antibiotics. So all the updates are there. I've been texting with his wife. All the updates are up on the live chats page. So hopefully Jay will be back up and running for this matchup with Chad. Chad's going to be instant heel in this tournament. Faces
right.
The epitome of a fan favorite, Jay Womet.
That's right. He's going to have to.
All right.
Heel.
Next up, we have one new competitor against one of our tournament guys from last year, and that is James Salerno taking on Mr. Austin Pfeff.
Yes.
Mr.
Pfeff. Looking forward to that one. And now, JR, the creme de la creme here.
This is a big-time matchup. I can't believe one of these guys is going to be gone after round one.
Yep. Duke Carolina, Yankees Red Sox, Lakers Celtics, Derek Cornett, Jason Greenhouse.
What a matchup. What a matchup.
Powerhouses.
Two guys that were legit contenders last year, were in good battles, and two very knowledgeable guys. Both were part of the WrestleMania tailgate. A lot of links here for this storyline.
Yes.
So again, just to recap, Jesse Bai versus Steve Willey, Matt Farrell versus Todd Weber, James Grunberg versus Jim Hogan, Dennis Nunez versus Jordan Duncan, Chad Campbell versus Jay Womet, James Salerno versus Austin Pfaff, and Derek Cornett versus Jason Greenhouse.
What a battle. Those are some nice matchups.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, Soup playing the heel, and Cornett, who's always a heel, against Greenhouse.
Yep. Oof.
Good matchups. And we're only halfway through, folks.
Yep.
Plenty more to come now.
Let's just reveal the Friday matchup now. And these are two guys, one from Australia, one will be visiting overseas, and that is Dave Hall, the runner-up to last year's finals, against Dave Crisafi. So those guys will battle later in the week on the Friday. We'll record that one. So now, Scott, let's get to the final eight matchups here, recorded the Wednesday night of that week.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you kick us off?
Okay. Coming up first, our pal north of the border, Mark Poirier.
Poirier, come on.
Poirier.
Fucking
I'm
heck.
Poirier. That sounds more. Sounds like a A&E show.
Poirot.
Mark Poirier taking on another. I'll say another A&E stalwart.
I was gonna say another asshole.
Well, sometimes he is, but no. PTB mainstay, and that is, of course, the great Jeremy Nichols.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right, interesting matchup next. Two guys that were not participants last year. That is Rob King against our boy Mark Clare stepping up. He's been studying.
Vince's gonna let him out of the limo for the night.
Clare's been studying.
Yeah. Next up, pretty good matchup here. My boy from Scranton, Neil Trauma, taking on a guy who's been talking a little smack. Just a little smack. Ryan Schmuck.
Talking a lot of smack.
Yeah. Thinks he's going to cruise here.
All right. After that, we have Mike Poulin checking in against King James Mander.
Ah, look at that. A little royalty in the tournament this year. I'm excited for that one. Next up. A guy that you mentioned earlier that Michael McDonald from the other side of the from way on the other side of the pond, taking on our defending champion Jay Hinchey.
There he is, the number one seed pops up here. Yep. Tough matchup for McDonald. He's going to be ruining the fact that he had a switch off a Sunday, but he has to go against Jay Hinchey now.
Yes,
due to the random assignment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, up next we got Brian Meyer against Sean Flaherty. Plucky underdogs.
Next up, Steve Riddle will take on Ryan Everett.
And the final match on Wednesday to wrap up the opening round, Aaron George, Ashley Cruz. That'll wrap us up for round one. So just to recap, Mark Poirier versus Jeremy Nichols, Rob King versus Mark Clare, Neil Trauma versus Ryan Schmuck, Mike Poulin versus King James Manda, Jordan Duncan versus, Michael McDonald versus Jay Enchi. I did that one on purpose. Right. Brian Meyer versus Sean Flaherty, Steve Riddle versus Ryan Everett, and Aaron George versus Ashley Cruz.
And once again, the Friday night matchup. Last year, a bridesmaid. This year, hope to be a bride. Dave Hall and Dave Crisafi.
So there it is. Take to the Facebook page. Talk your trash. Talk your smack. These are set to be recorded the first week of June, so you have some time to study.
Mm-hmm.
You got about 3.5 weeks to get your studying in. And we will begin recording, and they'll begin airing that week as well. And like Scott and I said, hopefully we'll do maybe two a show trying to get something.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to have to do that, because we do one a show.
It's just too many. I mean, we're looking at 16 matches.
We're going to get to the next round by August, and we kind of want to.
Although, if we do two shows a week, That's what, eight? Yeah, that'd be 2 months.
Yeah, no.
So we can bang them out in a month if we do do to a show, and then July we'll start round two.
Okay. Before we go.
Yes.
I want to throw you a trivia question, my PIC.
You sure it's, I mean, if it's that good, should we be saving it for the tournament?
It's not, this is not one that could be used in the tournament. Okay. It kind of relates to tonight's show. We're talking about the July 16th, 1990, Saturday's main event that aired on July 28th. And of course, it was the prelude to SummerSlam. JR, do you remember the episode number of our SummerSlam 90 vault?
Oh, man.
Take a shot. Think about the timeline.
I got this. Hang on.
What? Hang on. I'm going to look.
I'm not looking. I know it. I'm going to say 47.
Very close.
46.
42. Ugh. 47.
Fuck!
47. Yes, 42. We did it on June 26th, 2011.
There you go.
With SummerSlam 90. Let me see what episode 47 was, just to pique my interest now. 43 was our awesome interview with Eddie Edwards. Mm-hmm. 40, oh, wait, I went the wrong way. 40, episode 146 was Raw 1000, in case you wanted to know. Let's see, July 2000, here we go, July 2011. Episode 46 was our first half year in review recap from 2011.
Okay.
That was you and I. And then episode 47 was the 91 Rumble.
Yes, and I knew the 91 Rumble was right around there, and I was trying to count backwards from there.
Yep, and then 48 was the one after I came back from my cruise and raised hell. So there we go. Just wanted to throw that out there. So, and I just wanted to say that for our PTB members, some of our newer ones that have not had a chance to listen to everything, if you want to kind of correlate this episode, go back to episode 42. That is our SummerSlam 90 vault.
Yep, if you want to re-listen to it.
Yep.
So there you go, Nation. Hope you enjoyed the content this week. DDP interview, of course, is to come. We're hoping it may be late June by the time we get to it, but we will be interviewing Diamond Dallas Page on the show.
Yep, definitely going to happen.
So next week we have Kevin Kelly in the house Monday night. I'm going to finally get to the first half of 99.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wednesday night we have headlines. We're going to preview Extreme Rules. Ugh. Jordan Duncan will be here for Half-Baked Ideas, and Kyle Forchetti confirmed today. He'll come on and talk some NFL draft recap with us.
Yes.
And Scott, you know, we got some things in the works coming up. We'll make an announcement over the next couple weeks. Something major breaking here in the place.
Big time. The next step in the evolution of you and I as and many others as media giants.
Yep. So, a lot going on.
It's a big step.
We'll get to that. We'll tease it here, but it'll be a little bit before the rest of you get to find out that deal. So. All right, Scott, let's wrap up. We are done here this week. Hope you enjoyed Saturday Night's Main Event. Hope you enjoyed, what did we talk about Monday? Fully Loaded?
Fully Loaded 99, yes.
Fully Loaded 99. Go back and check that out, as always. That's Scott. I'm Justin. Scott, I'll see you Friday night.
Yes!
Nice little weekend coming up. Mm-hmm. Do some cataloging, some drinking.
Some watching. And we get to see Jim.
And hug him. And kiss him. And watch him.
And we get to see Jim in the jungle.
That's right, hopefully. All right, let's wrap up. We're out of here. That's Scott. I'm Justin. We'll talk to you next week, Monday night, with KK.
Clean up the hooch. Jesus, Vince.
You're a hooch. Turner a hooch.
Claire's no hooch.
Claire's in Turner a hooch?